No, but you have to study, because I do have tremendous respect for any audience to which I am exposed, and I found that we always have intelligent and learned people, and they come up with unexpected but serious questions, and I don't take for granted. I believe that an audience deserves the very best. There's nothing too good for an audience. And I'll be frank with you, I am still very conscious when I have to face any kind of a lecture audience. I do not take it easy. Even here, when I have to go in, you know, I teach two classes every day. In an Orthodox synagogue, you must have an adult class in the morning and in the evening, Talmud, Mishnah. And if I lecture 20 minutes, I will prepare about half an hour. Otherwise, I wouldn't dare to open up, because we have now many learned Jews. You asked me about the young generation. Don't forget that schools like Hillel Academy, there are over 450 of these. There are over 100,000 students there. And we have quite a few college students who know some Talmud, and you know Jewish literature and Jewish history. And some of them do remain. I mean, I would say the preponderance of them remain observant Jews, committed Jews. In fact, I believe that your grandson had a friend, a student in Hillel, if I am correct. I think for some time.
Oh, yes.
I used to see near
Margie
Hillel.
Myers.
Didn't you go to Hillel?
Right, she goes.
So you see,
yes,
that I know what goes on.
My grandson's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Yes.
You cannot take for granted we live in an age of enlightenment. Don't forget, the audience, the congregation which we have is not what it was of the immigrant class of 40, 30 years ago, or 50 years ago. And this is an age of enlightenment. Television has done tremendous. It has its liabilities, but it has done much. And therefore, you must never take your audience for granted. I give two sermons every Saturday, morning and late in the afternoon. I conduct classes. But I believe a rabbi must be well-prepared if he loves and respects his audience. And if you do not love and respect them, you have no right to be a rabbi.
Right. I met quite a number of young men in the Technion who were very Orthodox,
right,
young men.
Right,
I was involved in that through Mr.
Right.
Levinson.
Right.
And I was so impressed with the quality of these boys who were scientists.
Yeah.
And they were extremely observant.
I have a nephew in Israel, Rabbi Professor Babkov. He got his PhD in Columbia when he was 19. He's an internationally known psychologist in his particular field of experimentation. And he's a Talmudist, observant, American-born, and so forth. And at the same time, he's a professor in an academic field. And you find many, many of these. In Washington, in the Justice Department, you go in, over 60 younger people, Jewish prominent lawyers with yarmulkes are working. Over 60 of them, and they are let off during the short Fridays, winter time, 3 hours before sunset to go to Silver Springs or to the other suburbs of Washington to get back to their homes. They have a congregation of such observant scientists and high-level government workers, over 600. They don't employ a rabbi, because among them there are at least about 30 ordained rabbis. So it has changed, you know.
It's fine to see the caliber of these young men who are occupied in the world of science, and yet their orientation is right in their own religion.
Right.
Impact or involvement in politics, war, depressions, prohibition.
Have you been involved actively?
Well, I'll tell
politics?
You how I have been involved. I have been a volunteer civilian chaplain to our Air Corps cadets who trained in Pittsburgh at universities during World War II. This is number one. Number two, I like to identify myself with the liberal progressive trend in politics. So quite often, even a Democratic candidate is not liberal enough for me. I want to speak to you very candidly about it. And sometimes we have to agonize very, very much I do know that in the last elections I did not vote. I did not want to vote for Nixon, and the other candidate was not exactly my idea. And although Nixon was a friend of Israel and he did much for Israel, but because of my liberal tendencies, my conscience would not permit me to vote for a man like Nixon, just as I could not vote for our present president if he's nominated for. I am not active in politics, and I never endorsed from the pulpit any candidate. I am active to the extent with politicians and government officials where I can attain certain goals, either for Soviet Jewry or on behalf of the State of Israel. But otherwise, I am certainly not active in politics.
Thank you. Now, your children, it asks us to have you contrast the way you were raised with the way you raised them.
Well, our children were brought up in a free society, number one. Our children were brought up in a different level of material and economic comfort than we were brought up. Our children had more options than we had. We had much less options in life than we had. And of course, we went out of the way to expose them to an intensive Jewish education and also to a higher secular education. As to what they decided to be in life, that was purely their own convictions and their own decisions. We never told them what to be, and we never tried to influence them. I have discussions with our 18-year-olds. I ask them what they want to be. I ask them what they like to be, and this. But I am not trying to influence them. I'm telling them what my father used to tell us as his boys in his home. He said, I don't care what you are. I'm not asking to be a rabbi. Be a shoemaker. But one thing, I want you to make the best pair of shoes on the block. You have to make the best pair of shoes. Then I don't care if you are a shoemaker. And that is what we tell our children, that they must search for excellence in life. Whatever field they choose, whatever they want to do, they should do it well. That's all.
That's great. Well, you gave us the answers to 16 just about any way, unless there's something you'd like to add to it. Religious observances, institutions, and organizations.
I think that's pretty well covered,
unless there is something you'd like to add.
Well, I just want to say together with you that the level of religious awareness, the level of religious enlightenment is much higher now than what it was decades ago, by virtue of the fact that we have much better facilities for Jewish religious education than we had before. And we also have a different caliber of religious leaders who are whose efforts and activities are much more relevant to the needs of their constituency than it was decades ago in Pittsburgh or in Cleveland or in St. Louis or any other place. I believe that we are sensitive to relevancy, and we try to respond to the needs of the day, to the needs of the hour. I would say that Pittsburgh has improved because we have a larger, by far a larger number of educated, enlightened people who are vitally involved in Jewish learning, Jewish activities, Jewish needs, the State of Israel. But of course, the State of Israel brought about a tremendous revolution in the thinking and the commitment of young people, especially the Six Day War. It has done miracles for the Jews of Soviet Russia and also for the Jews of Pittsburgh. Taking the incident in Uganda several weeks ago, how it electrified our youth. I spoke to Jews, some of them who are on the fringe, who are marginal, who are residual Jews. You know, they're marginal Jews, residual Jews, and so forth. And they were just electrified and excited. Now, the State of Israel has done a tremendous thing by way of exciting our youth with a sense of belonging, a sense of pride in their heritage, and it gave them a new sense of identity, and we are benefiting from it.
That's a very important statement. We're asked to contrast Pittsburgh today with Pittsburgh yesterday, socially, culturally, politically, environmentally.
Well, what do you mean? What do they mean when they say yesterday?
Well,
how
I
far
think
back?
We're thinking about people who were here around the turn of the century or in the 20s.
Well, that is,
no,
you've been
you
here.
Weren't around anywhere.
No, it would not come under my purview.
No, I don't think it would.
No.
Well, how do you view Pittsburgh's Jewish life and its place in the general community now? That's an important question.
Well, I believe that Pittsburgh is a well-organized Jewish community. That's the number one. I believe Pittsburgh Jews are generous. They compare very, very well with other communities in the United States and the United Kingdom. It is only tragic that our community numerically is not growing. We are going down, and I'll be honest with you, although it may be for the record, especially among the observant families, their children do not remain in Pittsburgh. They move out. They move out to New York, around New York, in the suburbs, to larger areas, some of them even to Israel. And we, the observant community especially, we do not succeed in keeping our children here. I know already all of our married children are not in Pittsburgh. And I have many, many friends who have exactly the same thing, the same thing. And this diminishing tendency of the community is something which worries me very, very much. I'm very upset about it. And we, many of us rabbis, are beginning to serve a geriatric generation.
What do you think is the reason that they are the observant younger people and nothing else?
Well, many of them do not find enough of a social life for the observant in Pittsburgh as they would find it, let's say, in New York or in the suburbs of New York. You don't like to be a minority. You don't like to be an isolated group. You do not like to be the guy upon whom they point with a finger. Even with the increase in observance among youth, as you recognize and you and I, they are still in the minority. A decisive minority. And they would rather like to go in places where there is a full community of observant Jews, where there is an enclave. And we have now in North America such enclaves. We have it in Far Rockaway, we have it in Bell Harbor, we have it in Bella Seawood near Philadelphia, we have it around Detroit, around St. Louis, we have it in Los Angeles, we have it in Boston, in Newton, Massachusetts. There are about 20 or 25 enclaves of observant Jews. See, I speak as an Orthodox rabbi.
Mm-hmm.
And here, we do not have such an enclave. Let's say Squirrel Hill. Well, Squirrel Hill has a predominant Jewish population. I do not believe that Jews are the majority in Squirrel Hill. I am not convinced of it as yet. I don't believe we are. But even here in Squirrel Hill, the overwhelming majority are non-committed, residual, and marginal Jews. Residual means I belong to Sharon Torah because my grandfather belonged here. Marginal I am because I have not decided yet to turn to Catholicism or to Protestantism, and I'm sticking to Judaism, but not with knowledge, not with observance, not with a sense of loyalty, but I'm just marginal. I am right here in that periphery. And I would say that they are the crop of an illiterate Jewish generation, religiously illiterate. They did not receive a proper Jewish education. And the observant community, with all the excitement and observance, and you see even the Lubavitcher, you know, with the beards and the kaftans. I do tell you that one can be a full Jew without a kaftan and without the long beard and the relax. In fact, our parents, who were fully observant, they never permitted, even if one of the boys in the house wanted to have long relax, my father said, no, that's not necessary. According to the law, you don't need it. You just go up to here. But if you do more than is needed, and somebody will make fun of you, you will not do even that which is minimally expected of you. I don't want you to dress and act in a way that it will be hard for you to live among Gentiles, my father and my mother would always say. And therefore they insisted that we know several European languages. They insisted that we know music, that we know the arts. My mother would go out and pay with very much needed money at home to get tickets for us to go to the legitimate theater when we were 10, 11, 12 years old. We had a very fine theater in our city, but she insisted, she wanted us to go see the arts. Opera was terribly important. It was a necessity and so forth. And we in Squirrel Hill, we do not have a substantial number of the observant. They are still in a limited number.
Much limited.
Yeah.
I noticed that there isn't even a kosher restaurant in
right.
the city of Pittsburgh.
Right.
Are you aware of that?
Right. And we tried twice, and it went bankrupt twice. Twice we tried it. Now there's a little kosher corner here where my kids, I know, get pizza. Kosher pizza and some other kosher things right here on Maria
really?
Connor Hobart. Yeah.
And that's permitted.
Oh,
because I know that
yeah.
the Hillel Foundation
right.
at the Y
right.
started the restaurant
right.
to meet that
right.
need.
And there too, we the rabbinical board, we took care of that restaurant. And now we have also a kosher bakery, Zulberg's. And you know, in a bakery there can be many items which are not kosher. But we have now a kosher bakery, and in a volunteer gesture, we gave it endorsement and supervision.
When you had said that your family did not, are you of a Hasidic tradition?
My wife comes, of course, from the Tversian, the Hasidic, but my parents,
no.
No, and they always insisted that you dress, you speak, you conduct yourself as anyone else, but you can still be a good Jew. And they thank
you for that. You retain the respect of people, I think, when you don't make yourself
right.
look so different.
And with our children,
life.
We did the same, incidentally.
Mm-hmm.
Our children, too. We have the twins. And you'll be surprised, in my own synagogue, there are youngsters of their age who will come with a black hat, and they will come with a long
pace.
But not my boy. My Ruby wouldn't.
I never knew what the significance of the black hat was.
Well, it is just to create more and more a wall of separation. This is their argument. But I believe that identity is established through learning, through scholarship, through knowledge, through awareness, through enlightened commitment. I do not believe that I have to look different from someone else when I walk in the street.
Do you have many Hasidim in your congregation?
We have some. Are very sympathetic. Hasidism is catching, and I'll tell you why. It is catching the imagination, because they are identified with those who are anti-establishment. Take the Eastern cults now on the university campuses. They have wide appeal because they are somewhat different and they're challenging the established church, the established synagogue, and so forth. And because they are so different, with the long, the kaftan and the beard and the earlocks and with their singing. For example, the University of Pittsburgh calls me up, the dean in graduate school, being that I was a visiting lecturer at the university, and they asked me to sit in on a PhD examination. You know, when you write your thesis, you have to defend it. your own defense is the most important and crucial time. And they asked me to sit in together with the professors to examine. And you'll be surprised what kind of examination. I sit in often on such examinations. But this star was a young girl brought up in a non-observant Jewish home. And she decided to write about the Nigun, the melody of the Hasidic, The daughter of Dr. Yale, is this on the... Can I keep this up? Because there are quite a few of these. They see something different, the Eastern cult, you know, the dress and this, and anti-establishment. You're entirely different. You know, Jesse Cohen, who is very young.
Yeah.
His daughter married such a Hasid.
Is that right?
Yeah. I think Chaim Potok's book have a lot to do with the interest.
Yes.
The kids are studying them in the...
Yeah, well, it may be... I would put together a number of things, and don't forget also that they are very militant and very aggressive and very active. They will go out and they will proselytize on Murray Avenue. They have a van, and did you know this?
Yeah.
And a bus, and they will stop your son, your husband, I'm speaking in collective sense.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you put on film? Wouldn't you say a prayer? And this is a novelty, because we Jews never indulged in this kind of work. In fact, when the Gentiles come to me, and quite often, from the university, from other places, to convert to Judaism, I, as a rabbi, am obligated to discourage.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get many people who want to convert other than because of marriage?
No.
No.
Only once I had a Catholic priest. Mm-hmm. No, and two students. Three, I had. But it had nothing to do. A Catholic priest didn't have any money for marriage. I discouraged them.
Well, that's, I know proselytization is against.
We don't approve.
Yes.
We don't spend even one penny to save a soul.
I think that Elizabeth Kostkopf was not Jewish, this girl's mother. I knew her.
She's of the first marriage.
Yes, well, that's what I'm talking
about. Yeah.
Well, is this child of the second marriage?
No, she's of the first.
Of the first. Well, that was her mother.
So the first one was Jewish?
No.
I
knew her mother.
Oh, so you know Beth?
Yes. She was not
Jewish. Can we turn this up for a moment? Wait a minute. Yes, well, I would like to say this. No living human being accomplishes everything which he wants to accomplish. And sometimes he does not accomplish even a fraction of what he dreams to accomplish. And I think it would be improper and immature for me to say what I accomplished, because it is too soon. I'm too much involved. I'm too much subjective. I believe years later we'll be able to tell better what was accomplished. I believe it is too soon. I'm too close to the scene. And then there is a teaching of one of the great rabbinic moralists. He said that there is no mitzvah, there is no commandment to be a success in life. And there is no success mitzvah to achieve in life. There's only a mitzvah, a commandment, to try to achieve, to make every effort. But you must not be triumphant, and victory is not a mitzvah. We must, and I say it here in my congregation and in the causes in which I'm involved, maximum effort for minimum chance. As to what the results will be, this will leave to destiny and to the wheel of fortune. Sometimes a farmer puts in the best seed in the world in the ground, but then comes the hurricane and destroys it. You don't have the water, you don't have the sunshine, and so forth. So I am grateful, I would say, for the opportunity to have been able to make an effort in several areas of Jewish life. Be it Jewish education, be it Jewish scholarship, be it Jewish religious observance, be it Soviet Jewry, be it the State of Israel. I am grateful to God that I had an opportunity to be identified with these causes, to be involved, to have directed my efforts towards it. As to what it has produced or will produce, I really would not comment on it. This I'll leave over for future generations and for the historians. Let them decide. I don't have to tell you, as a human being, I have an ego. I will not tell you that I'm totally self-effacing. When I walk into my library there and I see my name in the Jewish encyclopedia and in other books, and some of my sayings quoted in other books, and this, of course, I derive a level of pleasure and so forth. But to say that I have had tremendous achievements and victories in this, I don't know. I just try, and I hope it will yield some results and so forth. That's all.
I think this has been a tremendous interview.
I do too. We don't have any details on how long your parents... Are your parents alive?
My father is not alive. My father passed away about 12 years ago.
And your mother is?
My mother is, thank God.
And she's living in Pittsburgh.
In Brooklyn, New York, with one of my sisters. Yeah.
I don't know how to thank you for this.
Oh, please. It was a pleasure to be with you. It's how often do you meet with you? Such intelligent women as you are, and you have been very kind and stimulating, really.